ask you this. Let me ask you this.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Sports Central.
Chicago Sports Conversation with Adam Hogue.
Go, go, go.
This is Sports Central. On demand and streaming live on WGNRadio.com.
Welcome into Sports Central. I am not Adam Hogue. I'm Kevin Powell. Adam Hogue is out in the desert. You know, he is now the White Sox post-game host. Well, one of two. He and Mark Carmen are... Let me pull the hotkeys down here. Here we go. Adam Hogue is out in the desert. I'm Kevin Powell filling in today on Sports Central. Much to get to. Adam will join us at about 1:40 from the desert. He's meeting all the players and checking things out at Camelback Ranch. He'll be there over the next few days. I think tomorrow and Friday he'll actually be hosting this show from the desert. So good for him. Chris Bowden, as I mentioned, the pre- and post-game host for the Blackhawks, will join us at 1:20. A really cool story out of Blackhawks camp yesterday morning. It was a make-a-wish situation. We'll get to the details there, and we'll talk to Adam at about 1:40. I want to start the show, and I'm going to fully admit that I don't think there's a bias here, but it's no secret now that that WGN is the flagship station to the Chicago White Sox. So there, it has been a little bit more Sox-centric. Wouldn't you say, Joe Romano behind the glass producing the show today? Wouldn't you say that's the case?
Yeah.
I want to be completely honest. It's not like it's some bias like, oh, we're going to ignore the Cubs. I mean, come on. We're going to cover both teams, of course.
Absolutely.
But over the past few weeks, one, where there's some excitement and buzz around the halls here at WGN that we are the home of the White Sox, and we've kind of been getting to know the front office people and the players and all that stuff. But obviously, there's a lot of Cubs news as well. So I wanted to start the show off today with Cubs stuff. I'm going to do full, like, 10, 15 minutes here on Cubs. Yu Darvish made his debut yesterday at Sloan Park against his former team, the Los Angeles Dodgers. Cubs ended up winning 9-5. By the way, Cubs 8-2 this spring. Not that the record really matters at all. You know, in 2005, Joe, the Chicago White Sox, sorry, I'm supposed to make this a Cubs segment here, but the White Sox, who went on to have a pretty decent year that season in 2005. Do you know where they finished in the Cactus League standings?
I'm going to go ahead and say last.
Second to last. So things worked out just fine. But records, nobody really cares about them in spring training, but 8-2 for the Cubs. Anyways, Yu Darvish, first start for the Cubs this spring. His first outing was scrapped due to illness, had some dehydration stuff. So at this time of year, all teams are being overly cautious with all their players, particularly a guy who just gave over $100 million. So the way it went for Darvish yesterday was he walked Chris Taylor. Then there was a wild pitch that sent Taylor to second. Corey Seager then proceeded to strike out. Then there was a stolen base by Chris Taylor to third, and Justin Turner walked, and there was another wild pitch. So two wild pitches within the first few batters for Darvish. Chris Taylor scored from third, but then Darvish settled down a bit. He proceeded to strike out Matt Kemp, and then he got Yasiel Puig striking out, swinging to end the first. In the second inning, much better, much cleaner frame there. He gets Logan Forsyth to pop out. Then he gets Austin Barnes to fly out. Then he strikes out the last batter. So overall, a solid day for Yu Darvish. Chris Bryant talked after the game, and he had this to say about Darvish joining the team and how excited he is to have Darvish on his club rather than having to face him at the plate.
You know, excited to have you here and opening our arms to him, and he's going to be a huge addition for us and just a dominating pitcher, and I'm glad I don't have to face him, so I'm glad he's on our team. Hopefully he's going to help us win a lot of games, and we're here supporting him and the whole Japanese culture, so it's going to be a great year.
Last year I asked you about moonshot, the home run moonshot.
Yeah.
Can we expect to see the moonshot?
Hopefully lots of moonshots. That'd be awesome. But if they go over the fence, that's all I care about. They can go to the first row, but moonshots definitely look a whole lot better.
What makes you so tough to face?
His stuff is sharp. It moves. He throws hard. So that obviously you got to stay on the fastball. But his breaking stuff is really sharp. And anytime you have a pitcher that isn't just going to throw a loopy curveball in there, it's definitely not a comfortable at bat. So I think he has the highest K per nine in the history of whatever thousand. That's some crazy stat, but it's good to have that type of presence on the mound now.
Can confirm you, Darvish strikes out a whole lot of batters. That's Chris Bryan. He went 1-for-2 yesterday against the Dodgers. Meanwhile, Ben Zobrist made his debut. Of course, all eyes were on you, Darvish. Everybody wanted to see what he could do on the mound. But Ben Zobrist back at the plate, 0-for-3 with a strikeout, but batting leadoff. And there aren't a whole lot of question marks coming out of Cubs camp this spring, and that's a good thing. They're just minor little details that the Cubs are going to kind of crank out and figure out as the spring goes on. And honestly, we probably won't have a better understanding of certain things, like who the leadoff guy is going to be, how the bullpen's going to sort itself out. I think we can all pretty much agree that leadoff spot is going to be a platoon. You're going to see Ian Happ. You're going to see Albert Almora. Joe Maddon's going to play matchups. Ian Happ struck out a ton last year. Almora, not so much. Zobrist hits righties better. Almora hits lefties better. And then, of course, there's Ben Zobrist, the veteran, who is like basically the perfect veteran guy. Day one, when I was out there, we talked to him, and he's like, look, I'm not even interested in individual achievements or really goals anymore. He's going to help the team out anyway. And we saw that last year, where he kind of bounced around. There's even talk of him maybe filling in at first base every once in a while to spell Rizzo, which I think makes sense. Zobrist is a guy that I think you could put everywhere. We've seen him in the outfield at second. Maybe we'll see him at first. So Ben Zobrist returned to the lineup, and again, that was more of a precautionary thing. He's the old guy on the team now. He's not very old, but he is the old guy on a team of a lot of young guys. So anyways, he was back in the lineup. He had this to say yesterday afternoon.
I feel great. Process was, normal, training room, strength conditioning stuff in the weight room. It's very, at this point in my career, it's just kind of something that you've known for years and years. So, it's just normal process, just like anything else. And, everybody has their routines that they do before they go out for stretch. People think we just show up and stretch and play the game. No, there's a lot of stuff that happens in the training room and in the weight room before we get out there. So just basically was just added work in the training room.
What are you trying to get out of today? What are you trying to accomplish today?
What am I trying to accomplish? Same thing I'm getting out of every day. I'm going out there to enjoy it. I'm going out there to work hard and to execute and bring some energy and learn, grow from the experience, whatever it is. So, that's my mindset. It's a growth mindset, and I'm looking forward to just what I can learn today and what I can learn from the guys around me.
Ben Zobrist, by the way, has only 23 career appearances with 11 starts at first base, his last coming with the Tampa Rays in 2010. But I don't think anybody would doubt Ben Zobrist's ability to play first. Would you, Joe?
Absolutely not. Actually, I want Ben Zobrist to play every single position on the field, including pitcher and catcher in one game. But seriously, though, I think he has the athletic ability and range to play first base. There's no doubt in my mind. A guy who has played, in the outfield, I think he's at least been in the
Left. He's been in right. We saw him play right in huge games. Remember NLDS against the Giants a couple years ago?
Absolutely.
When Hayward wasn't hitting anything and Maddon was finally like, screw it. We need you out of the lineup. Zobrist, you're going to right. And he did fine.
Yeah, he's a utility player. I think he could definitely play first. And Rizzo's going to need a break.
He's like the perfect utility veteran type guy. This is a Zobrist quote. I think I'll play a little first base in spring so that I can spell Riz occasionally. They know I've done it recently. Besides that, it's going to be the same type of deal. I'm sure it'll be an interesting outfield rotation. Again, Zobrist sat out the first 11 Cactus League games with a back issue, but he went 0-for-3. Joe Maddon on Ben Zobrist quote, I think he has his mental edge back. Two consecutive trips to the World Series in 2015 and 16, then almost again last year. It's not easy to do. I think he has been refreshed. I think he's really ready to rock and roll, and I think you'll see a younger mental version of Zo. I think we will too. And, you know, again, he's probably going to get some at-bats in the leadoff spot, but not a ton of question marks for the Cubs this spring.
And, and that's something you've been on, Kevin, since Game 5 in the locker room. You know, that this is a team that needs a break.
Yeah, and I know some people hate hearing that, and I've said that over and over again, is that they're professional athletes, they're millionaires, blah, 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 blah. I get it, but it's mentally taxing, it's physically taxing, it's probably even more so mentally, because they are elite athletes. You know, they know how to protect their bodies, they know how to get their bodies right, but I would say it's even more mentally. The travel, the intensity of the games, the high leverage moments of a game. It takes a lot on you. One of the, I guess, if it is a question mark, it's the bullpen. They had a ton of struggles last year, especially in the playoffs. Nobody could throw a damn strike. That was an issue. Theo and Jed have said in the offseason they just want guys that can throw strikes, so they bring back Dunsing. And they go get Brandon Morrow, who hasn't closed full-time in a long time, but he's expected to be your Cubs closer, and he made his debut yesterday against the Dodgers. Here's what he had to say after his outing.
Great. I think I was, you know, 95, 98 out there without, you know, really trying to step on the gas. So that's a good sign, obviously. And just trying to stay within my mechanics. And like I said, just make pitches.
Without jinxing you, and I don't know if you believe in those things in baseball or not, would, you know, a closing role be an easier thing just from a workload perspective than what you were doing last year?
Well, they've already, you know, said that they would like to control the workload, and as closer, you're able to do that a little bit more. You know, just throwing the ninth inning and knowing you're just going to be in that spot, not going, you know, multiples or multiple out saves or more than three out saves. So, yeah, it's definitely a more controllable role.
Two hits, one inning for Morrow. He gave up one run. It was unearned, though. Morrow, by the way, pitched in every single World Series game last year. So it's understandably he is 32, I want to say 33, something like that. So it is a controllable spot in the bullpen where you don't have to overwork a guy. But I think I'm interested to see how Morrow does fit into that closer role. I have been on the record of saying that I do think that the Cubs should have signed Morrow and Wade Davis. Davis, to me, even if you were going to give him 4 years, projects better than most relievers long term. He's a guy with four pitches. He's a pitcher. He's not a thrower. Guy like Aroldis Chapman, he's relying on gas and a couple pitches. Wade Davis is a former starting pitcher. He knows how to get guys out.
He's 33, going to turn 34 in July.
Okay. Morrow had this to say, by the way, quote, It takes a little while when you go to Game 7 and lose, and then you have to watch the Astros go on all the late-night shows for a month and parades, and they're all over everything. You see it played back over and over again, so it's hard to escape. But for myself, I had a very successful season and postseason, nothing but good memories. I'd say he had a pretty successful season. Not a single homer given up. Can we confirm that, Joe? I believe it was one or none.
Yeah, let me look at...
We can maybe get to that at the end of the show for what I screwed up, but... That's Brandon Morrow. Quickly back to you, Darvish, the way we started. Paul Sullivan Tribune had a column about Darvish and the tipping of pitches. We've heard an endless amount of debate and discussion about that. Darvish got rocked in the World Series in his last two starts. Just an inning and two thirds. Gave up a ton of runs. His ERA was 21.60. He took the loss in both games, including Game 7 in Los Angeles. The story after the series was that Darvish was pitching, tipping his pitches. Darvish, quote, obviously the Astros are a great, strong team, so I don't know, to be honest, if they knew my pitches. Darvish said through an interpreter, quote, they could just simply be a good, strong team, and it's in part me not being at the top level in the World Series. So there's Darvish admitting that not exactly sure if they were picking up his pitches, but that he simply wasn't good enough in the World Series. I think we can all agree with that. Manager Joe Maddon was asked if the Cubs had worked with Darvish this spring to eliminate any tells that would alert hitters of the pitch that was coming. Quote, he's been going about his work normally. Honestly, I don't know how much of our work is being concerned with that so much. That's overblown a bit. I don't know to what extent the Astros had him and how that played into him not having a great performance. So there you have it. So that's some updates on the Cubs stuff from today. Albert Almora made a hell of a catch in the outfield yesterday, and I think he left like a bloody nose or something. So we'll try to keep you updated there. But that's your Cubs update. Yu Darvish making his spring debut for the Cubs. Same with Ben Zobrist and Brandon Morrow. We promised some Cubs stuff. There's your Cubs stuff. We'll have plenty of Cubs stuff for the rest of the spring and throughout the entire season. Coming up next, we'll talk with Chris Bowden, the pre- and post-game host for the Chicago Blackhawks on WGM. Some cool stuff happened at the Blackhawks practice yesterday morning, their pre-skate before they won last night in overtime. So we'll get to Chris Bowden right after this.
Hawks control in overtime. Taves in front. He scores! Took him 9 seconds! And the captain takes a feed from Kane that originates from the right wing boards in front of the Av net. And he buried it into the top shelf. And the Hawks beat the Avalanche in overtime. 2-1.
All right, let's continue this love fest.
There it is.
It's Sports Central with Adam Hogue.
No big deal.
On demand and in real time on WGNRadio.com.
This is Sports Central. I'm Kevin Powell filling in for Adam Hogue, although Adam will be joining us in about 20 minutes. He's out at Camelback Ranch covering the White Sox for the next few days, so we'll check in with him, get the latest from Sox camp as well. That was a John Weideman, not a play-by-play game winner. Kane to Taves. Sounds good saying that. Kane to Taves for the winner. Not enough of that this year. Disappointing season for the Hawks. We'll get to a little bit more on that with Chris Bowden. Before yesterday's game, though, something really cool, and the Blackhawks just continue to do great stuff off the ice. Community involvement, charity, just some really great stuff we've seen out of the Blackhawks organization. Yesterday morning, Midlothian fifth grader Mason Berg pulled Jonathan Taves down by his jersey and gave him a few playful shots. I'm 0-for-2 in the last two. Taves laughed. Taves got in a fight a few nights ago against Ryan Kessler of the Anaheim Ducks. Taves said, quote, "Mason connected with far more punches than the one I had earlier this week, so it was a little tougher today." Taves' teammates and coaches skated with Mason, who has muscular dystrophy and was rolled onto the ice in a wheelchair. Hawks made him an honorary Blackhawk for a day after the team received a request from Make-A-Wish Illinois. Berg and his parents also were set to attend last night's game against the Avalanche, and they got a good one, Hawks over the Avs in overtime. Here's some audio from Mason Berg. Then it goes into Taves talking about the morning with Mason, and then we'll hear from Mason's mom. Take a listen here.
It was really fun, and I liked it when I was playing with all the guys, and then they fought Jonathan Taves.
It was great. I think it's kids like him that come out with a smile on their face, and it just doesn't seem like there's anything that can make them unhappy or throw them off their day.
He wants to be a Hawk so bad, and today was very special.
Today was very special. That's from his mom, Patty Berg. It was very special. Chris Bowden was there covering the Blackhawks for us, per usual. Chris Bowden, what'd you think of that with Mason Berg yesterday morning?
It was pretty funny. It's always one of my favorite days of the year. I mean, it's a privilege doing what I do and covering this team. But whenever they have those kind of moments and the Make-A-Wish ones especially, they touch you pretty deep. And just the way the whole team and all the players embraced this 12-year-old kid, battling something that too many people have to battle, but those of us who are fortunate enough to be live a healthy lifestyle can only imagine how blessed we are with not having to deal with some of those challenges. But the way the players embraced him, and the whole red carpet was practically rolled out for him behind the scenes as well. It was great to see him have a day where he can have a smile on his face and mingle with some of his heroes.
Yeah, and it never ceases to amaze me what the Blackhawks do off the ice, and pretty much all the major sports franchises here in Chicago do some great charity work, and I think the Blackhawks, just it seems like every month or so there's another cool video coming out of the Blackhawks surprising someone at their home or doing something like this. For you, you've been around the Hawks for years now. It's just pretty incredible to watch what they do with the community.
Yeah, I mean, that's where the organization set the bar since Rocky took over, and John and Jay came aboard too. There was a certain standard that they wanted to set. It hasn't always been without bumps here or there, but by the same token, there's an expectation level that's been raised, and they spent this whole leading up to last night's foundation night spending a month of just kind of surprising people. They selected locations and institutions and just instances where they can do what they were calling random acts of kindness, and some players would go out and surprise people, like at a senior's home, or whether it was Joel serving coffee and donuts over the Dunkin' Donuts down the street from the United Center. Just the way they've reached out to the community. And I'm sitting here outside this MB Ice Arena that was just completed and finally finished in December. And, you know, for the role that's going to play in trying to expose more people to the sport, that's kind of if you're just a diehard hockey fan and you're counting Stanley Cups and consecutive trips to the playoffs, Rocky Wirtz and John McDonough and Jay Blanc will have that kind of footprint or imprint, however you want to put it. But in the bigger sense, in a bigger scope of what their legacy will hold, it's doing all these things in the community and then opening up this state-of-the-art facility, which, yes, of course, it's going to help the players who are playing for them and try to make them as successful as possible. But by the same tokens, it's also opened the doors to practically, it's 20 hours a day that this place is open and available for whether it's, beer leagues or youth trying to learn the game or be exposed to the game. That's really kind of the imprint that Rocky and this management staff are really going to leave long term.
Talking with Chris Bowden, pre-post game host at WGN Radio for your Chicago Blackhawks, at Bowden Tweets on Twitter. All right. Off the ice, some wonderful stuff from the Blackhawks this year. On the ice, Not a pretty sight for the most part, Chris. Before the season, as we're all kind of prepping and you kind of get in hockey mode and you're reading basically everything that's posted online, analysts, experts, whatever you want to call them, and there were some people that were like, I wouldn't be surprised if the Hawks don't make the playoffs. And I think for me, myself, I'm like, please, come on. Even if they're not going to contend for a Stanley Cup, I think they'll get into the postseason at least. How surprised are you overall at how this season's turned out?
Real surprised, and obviously there's a ton of different factors here. First and foremost being the Corey Crawford injury, because they were right there in the thick of things. When he got injured, even after he was out for a while, they managed to tread some water right before they went on that long dry spell, which practically ran from right before the All-Star break to through the end of February, and they're still trying to fight and scrap their way out of it. Right before that happened, I think they were still sitting in the eighth seed, the second wild card spot. They were managing to get it done well enough, but since then, every other team has taken off while they have struggled. I never thought that they would struggle to score goals as much as they have this year. They've scored two or fewer in 18 of the last 25 games. Sometimes that's gotten it done, like it did last night, but more times than not, it's not going to. And between their struggles lighting the lamp, not having a goalie to save them for what would have been too many defensive miscues in their own end, with a lot of inexperience on the blue line as well, all those things have added up to where the Hawks are sitting right now. And it's really going to be an interesting offseason to see how Stan Bowman retools the roster, because he expressed confidence at the trade deadline in making the two moves with Hartman and Wingles, and he came down to talk to us a couple of weeks ago about how encouraged he is by some of the young players, and you should be with the likes of Schmaltz and DeBrinket and Hinostroza, and hopefully a couple of these defensemen can elevate their games. The bigger problem has been the guys you've come to rely upon. The tank hasn't been as full as you'd expect it to be, and you expect a lot more than Jonathan Toews with 44 points and Brandon Saad with 29 points on the season. Same with Duncan Keith scoring only one goal, Brent Seabrook just 19 points. I believe those two guys last year combined for somewhere in the neighborhood of 90 points. It may have only been a handful of goals each. I don't know if it was 9 and 6 each, but the two of them combined for almost 90 points from what I can recollect total. And now when you're seeing them down there, Keith with 29 points and one goal, and Brent Seabrook with 19 points and 3 goals on the season. That's just kind of indicative, along with Taves and Saad, about where this team has gone dry, and it's going to be interesting to see how they can try and reestablish their games. Brent Seabrook's used the season as a process of trying to do that, and he's gotten better since where he was early in the season. Now it's up to these other guys to, you know, whether it's tapping the fountain of youth or trying to adjust their games to the way the game is played right now. We've seen a little bit of flash from Jonathan Taves here in the last couple of games, and that's going to be the most interesting thing to see here this last month of the season, whether they can, you know, start elevating their games again to at least get some positive thoughts going into the offseason.
Did I hear that correctly? 2 or fewer goals in 18 of last 25?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you, wow. you combine that with yes, there have been stretches where they've been extremely sloppy defensively. That West Coast trip, you know, that they just completed is a prime example of that, where just the puck management hasn't been what we've become so used to. And, you know, it's one thing to look at some of the players who have less experience, you know, the Osterleys, the Dahlstroms, the Gustafsons, experiencing an NHL season for the first time, the rigors of it. And, you know, actually those guys got late starts as well, because 2 of them were in the minors and Osterley was a healthy scratch for so long. But it's when you see some of the veterans making some of the mistakes that they have, that's the alarming thing. So, how much Stan Bowman is going to put his belief with some of these veterans who haven't played up to snuff, I'm not sure how much of a choice he has with the contracts that they are in, but also seeing if some of these other kids can elevate their game next year. And obviously the big question is going to be whether Corey Crawford is going to be good to go at the start of next season. That could, because, you know, if Stan Bowman goes into an off season not knowing whether Corey Crawford could have taken the ice by the time this season ends, he has a big decision to make in terms of what he's going to do in goal. Whether he's just going to be patient enough and hope, keep his fingers crossed and hope Crawford becomes fully healthy once again, or I think he has to safeguard himself, try and decide whether, you know, the two options that they're working with now are good enough, or whether he's going to have to find a more certain option in goal if Corey Crawford, you know, isn't ready to go by the time next season rolls around. That's why I think it's so important that, you know, if by chance he does have an opportunity to get back on the ice before the end of the season, and with each passing day, it's looking more, less and less likely. But if that opportunity presents himself, I say you got to throw him back out there just to see how he reacts, get some game conditions under his belt, and then, you know, have Stan Bowman shape how he, you know, approaches that goaltending position going into the offseason as he looks ahead to next year.
Yeah, you're not alone there. We talked to Troy Murray just a week or two ago, and he said the same thing. If you got a chance to get out there, because you can't miss that much playing time. You got to get your mental, mindset, you know, in place and kind of going to this offseason with some sort of confidence. I do want to focus on Taves a little bit, because for so many years with Taves, it was always he's the full package on the offensive end, on the defensive end. He can do it all. But then the past 2 years, he's not scoring. So then he basically does become kind of one-dimensional, and he isn't that full-package player. And, okay, Brent Seabrook's 32, 33. Taves is my age. He's 28, 29. Like, he's a veteran because he's been here for so long, but he's not like this old, aging guy. So what is it with Taves? Why has he struggled at the offensive end of things over the past 2 years now?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question, and I'm sure he's asking himself that, too. There's been a bit of luck involved, as has been the case with Brandon Saad, too. You look at, you know, if you're one of these metrics guys, you know, whether you're a believer in that or not. I know Troy is not one of those. A lot of people rely on him. Even Stan Bowman says he even relies on it to a certain extent. The overall play has been, you know, above average to very good. It's just an inability to finish and score. And, you know, I know it, I wish I had that answer and I could pass it along to Jonathan. Jonathan wishes he has that answer so he could just go out there and fix it. Yeah. But yeah, it's a bit alarming to see the production dip the way it has over the last two or three seasons. You know, whether that's a mileage thing with all the hard hockey that he played for his first seven or eight seasons in the league, you would hope not. Whether it's, you know, over the past couple of seasons when he was separated from Saad, there was some question whether that was an issue, and, you know, finding the right line mates. Now Saad's back, and that hasn't been a solution. So I'm interested to see how he finishes here. You know, he's coming off a good game in Los Angeles Saturday where he had some production, then again last night. So, I mean, sometimes no matter how accomplished you are, this game, you know, we even talked to Patrick Kane about it a couple weeks ago when he was going through a drought. No matter how accomplished you are, it doesn't mean you are immune from going into dips in confidence. And I think that's happened to a lot of individuals. It may be the case with Jonathan. I know it's happened collectively to this team because this season is so unusual for them that, especially, you know, the guys who have been around and are so used to tasting success, to have, you know, this kind of overall failure to what, you know, their mindset was going into the season. We even see it game to game. You know, Troy and I talk even during intermission sometimes, even last night. Okay, they had a strong first period. They're leading 1-0. You figured Colorado was going to push back, and that's exactly what they did in the second period. They ended up tying it, and then there's a Saad goal that's disallowed. And when this team has, you know, because of the way they've been trending lately with, I think the record now is, you know, they went into last night losing 12 of their last 16. The way this team has trended lately, it's, you know, one of those, uh-oh, here we go again situations. It's almost like what diehard Cub fans felt through all the
And it
years.
Used to be opposite with the Hawks for so many years. Yeah, it was okay, Kane will find a way to get the puck at the back of the net with time winding down. It was always like, how are they're going to find a way to win? Now it's... That's completely flipped. By the way, Taves last year had 21 goals in 72 games. That was his lowest output of his entire career. Keep in mind, before that, it was 23, but that was in the 12-13 season when he only played 47 games.
Right.
So 21 goals last year for Taves, just 18 right now this year through 67 games. So, yeah, on the offensive end, not good for Jonathan Taves. So we saw some changes after last season, Chris. We saw Jalmerson get dealt. We saw some assistant coaching changes as well. What's going to happen this offseason? Is Joe Quenneville's run in Chicago over? Is there front office changes? What are you expecting to see this offseason?
Deep down, I still have if I had to bet, I'm saying, you know, both Stan and Joel are coming back. You know, unless their bosses wake up one day, depending on how the rest of the season goes, and you know, determine that you know, a new voice is needed. I just don't know how you top Joel Quenneville.
Yeah.
You know, you can make the argument that they need to hear another voice. Players Association poll comes out today around the league. You know, a bunch of players were polled anonymously, and Joel Quenneville was the coach voted that other players would most like to play for. Yeah. And through all that he has accomplished, the second winningest coach in NHL history, yeah, you can make the argument that some of these guys need to hear a new voice. But when you're coming back to that argument, then you're saying Taves, Kane, Saad, Keith, and Seabrook are the ones tuning him out, because basically everyone else on this roster hasn't been around Joel for that long. Yeah. And if you go up to those guys, whether it's on the record or off, you know, they'll say it's not a tune out Joel factor. You know, they just haven't been playing well. And if you bring someone else in with this current roster as it is, minus Corey Crawford, I'm not sure how successful anyone else is going to be, or how much more successful than they would be with Joel Quenneville. So, long answer turned short. Unless management decides that that new voice is needed, I'm thinking they get at least one more swing at this one more year to see if they can make some adjustments roster wise. Hope they find some stability in goal, that Corey Crawford does come back healthy, and give them one more shot at this, because, you know, a lot of people think two first-round exits and not making the playoffs are bad enough, which, granted, in this organization's mind, it is bad enough. Mm-hmm. But based on the success that those two guys have brought this organization previously, I believe the rope is probably shortening a whole lot, but I don't think they're at the end of it yet.
See, that's my stance on Q has been, look, you're probably not going to get a better coach in terms of X's and O's and leading a locker room. The guy's done it all for this town. He's going to be a legend in Chicago forever. He'll be on the Mount Rushmore of coaches. But when you, and I don't even put most of this on Q. I mean, you look at the players' performances. We just talked about Taves for the past 10 minutes about his decline over the past 2 years. So I don't know how you can place that on Q. I think if they were to move on, it would simply be to hit a refresh button and maybe bring in some new energy, new blood, whatever it may be. But I don't think any of us could ever sit here, even at this moment or as we look back down the road, and say, wow, Q could have done this or Q could have done that. For me, if they do move on, it would just simply be to hit that refresh button.
Yeah, it's the old Theo Epstein theory that there's a 10-year shelf life on managers. I don't think that, you know, based on the accomplishments that Rocky and John necessarily believe that with this head coach and this general manager, to say it's impossible, I can't say that's impossible that they wouldn't make a move, but based on all that tandem has rewarded them with, and believe me, there are Q haters out there. I mean, you just watch a Twitter timeline through the course of a game, which I try not to pay too much attention to. Everyone's an expert, the hockey snobs are all out there. They have all the answers. So there's a faction that's out there. But that's more in the
that's the fantasy social media crazy
fan base, rather than the hockey community.
Right, there are Corey Crawford haters out there, and he's been nothing but outstanding for this team over the past whatever 5, 6, 7 years. So, we shall see an interesting year for the Blackhawks. He's Chris Bowden. Got everything covered for you on your pre and post game shows at WGN Radio. Next game tomorrow night against the Hurricanes. Correct, Chris?
Yep. Yeah, we'll see if I kind of doubt that Scott Darling is going to be in net because he's had a rough year, Carolina is still scratching and clawing to stay in that. They'll see Table again and Trevor Van Riemsdyk, and that's an example right there of how this roster has turned over. They were forced, based on rewarding some of these guys, they were forced to make some moves, which involved some young players, and for the most part, they haven't been burned too much by it. Tavo might be one of those guys that they let go that, Joel was even asked about it, say, hey, do you ever think about if we still had this guy, where he'd put, where he'd be or where we'd be? And you just can't think that way. So we'll see, at least visit with Scott Darling if he doesn't play, and, see Tavo and Trevor Van Riemsdyk. That's a Carolina team that's just barely on the outside looking in. So with the way Darling has had his year, a disappointment for them, I think they'll still throw Cam Ward in there since they don't have a back-to-back. So, but I'm sure Darling will get a little scoreboard tribute regardless.
He's Chris Bowden. He'll have your Hawks pregame tomorrow night, 7 o'clock on 720 WGN and WGNradio.com, and then I'll have the postgame right after that, and you'll hear him on with John and Troy throughout the call as well. Chris Bowden, at Bowden Tweets. Thanks for joining me, Chris. Really appreciate it, man.
Hey, is Holga already taking vacation? What's going on? We're only a month into this?
I stabbed him in the back, and I have the show now, Chris. That's how I do things. Now, he's enjoying himself in Arizona. He's actually on assignment. He's covering the White Sox. He's now a are you going to provide any tips to him about how to run a post-game show properly? Because Adam's now, he and Mark Carmen are the White Sox post-game hosts for WGN. So you got any tips for Holga?
He can handle it. He'd probably do a better job than me. Definitely at baseball. When I'm doing baseball, I'm just waiting for the game to end. So that's the problem. There's no clock on it. So he has a lot more patience. He and Carmen will have a lot more patience than I could.
All right. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it. We'll look forward to hearing you on the call tomorrow night. Thanks, man.
All right. See you, Kevin.
That's Chris Bowden for WGN, pre-post game for the Blackhawks. We will talk with Adam Hogue next. He is out in the desert. He landed this morning in Phoenix. He's out in Glendale, Camelback Ranch. We'll check in with him next here on Sports Central.
WGN.
This is where WGN Sports Central lives.
It's alive!
Streaming right now with your host, Adam Hogue.
I'm Kevin Powell, filling in for Adam Hogue on Sports Central on this Wednesday afternoon. But Adam, is in Glendale at Campbellback Ranch. How you doing, Adam?
It's like we've switched places.
We have. I know. I spent 2 weeks out there, and now you're out in the desert. Didn't you have like a 5 a.m. flight out of Chicago this morning?
Yeah, nice two-hour nap, early wake-up call, 2:30 a.m., which is always good when you have a three-and-a-half-year-old who you're trying to make sure stays quiet. But, you know, we made it in time and got here, got some little bit of insight this morning on this team, and I'm sitting here in the WGN radio booth at Camelback Ranch, the White Sox taking on the Reds today. Good old Homer Bailey pitching for the Reds. Remember him?
I remember Homer Bailey. I think I'm more excited to see Luis Robert get a start today.
Yeah, I was going to say, spring. I was like, that's the big story today. Luis Robert, Cactus League start for Luis Robert today. He's been in some B games, and so far, Ricky Renteria telling us a little while ago that he likes what he's seen from Luis Robert, just looks like a natural player. I haven't had a chance to see him in person yet. He just came to the States. I know you did, Kevin, but just seeing some of the video that's been out there, when he's standing there at the plate, he has that tall, it's almost Mike Cameron. I don't want to say Ken Griffey Jr. So let's keep it a Mike Cameron type, just when he's standing there at the plate, really tall center fielder type approach to the game, and everything looks fluid with him. So I'm excited to see him in person today.
I think what you'll find, Adam, from just being in the clubhouse and the more you see these guys, whether it's Kopech or Jimenez or Robert, is how imposing of players they are. They're all huge. Everyone in the clubhouse is huge other than Yolmer Sanchez. But everyone is like, you're like, holy crap. Rick Hahn has gone out there and just got like an incredibly athletic farm system. Everybody is huge and athletically gifted on this team.
Yeah, Moncada's the only one that's a little bit short, but he's
a little
still
short, but he's
filled
thick.
Out.
Yeah, he looks like he could play like, you know, cornerback for the Bears or
sure. Then maybe they could franchise tag him, but
transition tag Adam.
Yeah, I know. There's a little shot at myself. Yeah, looking at Avi Garcia, for instance, today, who we've seen now for a few years, but just watching him take BP, I mean, that guy's a massive human being. Jose Abreu, you know all about. So I think we can add Luis Robert to the mix. Eloy Jimenez, I found something interesting that Ricky Renteria said today. He said, he's getting closer to being able to play in the game, but then he kind of said something like, whether or not that's here, we're not sure yet. Sort of a small hint that Eloy Jimenez may never even get in a spring training game here, which would be
a little disappointing. Well, he's been in two, but he hasn't started, and it's just been very limited. I think two at-bats for him this spring. That would be disappointing, especially since, Rick Hahn talked the other day, and he was talking about, I think it was on Jimenez, they went and got an MRI, and Hahn joked that sometimes they give players MRIs to ease the mind of the player, but he also says sometimes we do it to ease the mind of the general manager, considering how the spring has gone with Mike Rodolfo with the sprained UCL and then the devastating injury to Jake Berger. So that would be a little disappointing. We talked about the Berger injury, and it was tough to really sugarcoat that one because everything was going so well in spring camp. But as we've heard another baseball guy in town say multiple times, progress is not linear, nor is success. So this isn't going to be some easy road. And I've sort of said that to some Sox fans, too, because it's so easy to get pumped. And I'm not trying to be like a Debbie Downer here and be like Mr. No Fun, but things are going to happen. Injuries are going to happen. Some of these guys aren't going to pan out. And let's keep in mind that even if everything does go according to plan for the White Sox, look at the Yankees. Look at the Astros. There's a whole lot of teams that are doing what the White Sox are doing. Now, the White Sox are in much better position than a lot of these teams. And again, I'm not trying to be a downer here, but things are going to happen. And to see Jimenez dealing with the patellar tendonitis and missing some time here, it's kind of a bummer.
You know, he is listed on the available position players today. Okay. Which is probably why that question came up. So I don't mean to put fear in the White Sox fans. I think that they're still monitoring the situation, and the fact that he's listed on the lineup card as available is at least encouraging. I haven't been down here every day, so I can't tell you if he's been on that lineup card every single day.
Well, Hahn did say yesterday that it is pretty much completely precautionary at this point, so it's not like something major they even think could turn into. And again, the MRI they did have him; everything was fine. So, I think we'll just trying to give some perspective to it all. For you, sure. Adam, for you, Adam Hogue, you're out there for the next 3-4 days or so. What as you're heading out, you're putting your notes together and all that. What are you most looking forward to seeing, other than what we had kind of covered with this incredible amount of talent and athleticism that's on display? Is there a specific guy you're looking to talk to, or getting a sense of where things are at? What are you looking forward to most while you're out there?
Yeah, well, great question. The first and obvious answer is that Michael Kopech's pitching tomorrow here at Camelback Ranch against the Royals. And for me, you know, once the season starts, we're not going to see Kopech, at least at the beginning. Ina Rakan did say that Kopech is going to start the season in the minors, which is not a surprise. When he comes up, I think we can all agree it's a good chance it happens this season at some point. But when that happens, we don't really know. Michael Kopech will ultimately determine that. So just to get an opportunity here in the next couple days to be able to see him up close in person, I'm definitely looking forward to that opportunity tomorrow when he faces the Royals. And then, you know, I was just really happy to see Luis Robert in the lineup today, because these are the guys that
project long term.
Right, we're not going to see them when opening day comes around. I can't wait for opening day, and it's going to be great to see the team that they put out there. But, you know, part of the great thing about coming to Camelback Ranch, if you're a fan the last couple seasons, is you really get to look at some of these prospects, the future of the White Sox, up close and personal.
We're talking with Adam Hogue, who is the host of Sports Central, but I'm hosting today, and he's out in the desert covering White Sox stuff, and he'll have stuff, I'm sure, at WGNRadio.com and reports and all that stuff. Adam, now the one of two post-game hosts for the White Sox this season, he and Mark Carman, so looking forward to that. You want to do a little Bears stuff for a minute,
sure.
Adam, since you are a Bears, official Bears insider? There's a tweet from Ian Rappaport. Seahawks quarterback Richard Sherman has told teammates goodbye over the past 24 hours, sources say, and that he won't be on the team. Those close to him say nothing is set in stone and there has been no official word, but clearly Bears watching. Have you seen that tweet from Rappaport today, Adam? And what are your thoughts on a potential Richard Sherman?
Now, I've heard the Richard Sherman stuff today. Did not see that specific tweet. How did he spell the word Bears?
Wow, I totally missed that. That's a good point.
I'm just kidding. I don't know. I'm
assuming you're right.
He spelled it.
You're right. I honestly was just like skimming through some notes that were handed to me, and it says, but clearly Bears watching. And then someone did tweet in response, wait, the Bears are watching with a capital B.
Yeah,
so I'm an idiot. But he wasn't actually saying the Bears are watching. But what would your thoughts be on Richard Sherman now?
Yeah, I don't think he really fits the mold of what the Bears are looking for, trying to stay younger. They're trying to stay. I mean, just look at the roster purge recently. Anybody who's close to the age of 30 is no longer on the team. Kyle Long is the oldest player on the team at 29. I think the reason why they don't want to lose Kyle Fuller is he's going to be 26 this upcoming season, still really young. So, Richard Sherman's proven to be a really good player, but I don't think he really fits what the Bears are doing right now. An interesting day for the Seahawks because they also traded Michael Bennett to the Eagles. These are moves that are expected. The Seahawks, not that we're doing a Seattle radio show right now, but they're a team that I talk about this all the time, and I was talking about this about the Vikings the other day and why they should go after Kirk Cousins, because these windows close so quickly. Yeah. When the Seahawks won the Super Bowl, we all thought that they were going to be a dynasty because of that defense and how good they looked. And the reality is the Patriots have really been the only team in the last couple decades that have been able to sustain success despite constant roster turnover. So the Seahawks are in that position right now where they're shedding some of these veterans, and we'll see what their roster looks like, because losing Michael Bennett and Richard Sherman, that's a big change.
That's a good point about the limited window. Remember when the 49ers went to the Super Bowl, Kaepernick and Jim Harbaugh was running the team. Everyone thought that was a team that's going to be great for like 5 years to a decade. They had all these draft picks coming back next year, and then in a matter of two seasons they were awful. So it's
maybe they would have been if Jim Harbaugh had stuck around.
There's so much tension between he and the
Couldn't hold it together, and that's why you talk about organizational continuity. Everybody needs to be on the same page, which I would say right now is very encouraging between Ryan Pace, Matt Nagy, and Mitchell Trubisky, the quarterback, because that's really what you need. You need that triangle to work.
Kyle Fuller, any extra thoughts? I know we talked about it yesterday, the transition tag applied to him. What are your thoughts today on Kyle Fuller and his situation?
So what's interesting is the way it turned out actually jives with what I wrote a week ago and what I was hearing at the Combine, which was that the franchise tag or the transition tag. We keep having this conversation calling it the franchise tag because that's really what's being used. But the point being that I was being told last week the franchise tag was still in play because basically for the reason how it all worked out, this transition tag makes a lot of sense for this unique situation because Kyle Fuller is a guy the Bears don't want to lose. But he's not necessarily one of these top-tier Le'Veon Bell-type players who you absolutely need to tag to make sure you don't lose him completely. So this is going to give Kyle the opportunity to test the market, can field some offers. Teams are allowed to extend him an actual contract offer to which the Bears can then match or let him go. And I think right now the Bears are sitting in a spot where they feel like they've gauged the market and don't think he's going to be offered, certainly don't think he's going to be offered more than the $12.9 million he's going to get with the transition tag. I've been saying over and over again, I think it's going to be between 10 and 12. And if it comes somewhere in that area, I feel like the Bears will be comfortable in matching and keeping Kyle Fuller. So the expectation, and I did field a couple calls this morning on this to get some extra insight on it. The expectation, I think, on both sides is that Kyle Fuller will be a Bear in 2018. And just throwing in my own guess from what I've been told, I think I'd be surprised if he plays under the tag. I think a long-term deal will eventually be reached. But I do think Kyle, this transition tag caught them a little bit off guard. There was an expectation that he was going to be tagged, but I didn't think they necessarily thought it was going to be the transition tag. And when this really came down to the wire yesterday, and I think there was even confusion on Kyle Fuller's side about what was actually happening, and when the report from Ian Rappaport came out that it was a transition tag, everybody involved, I think, was a little bit caught off guard by that aspect of it. And so they'll move forward. I think Kyle's motivated to hit this market. It's not the open market, but he does hit the market and is hoping to get a big offer from a team because if that happens, that's going to put the Bears in a tough spot.
That's Adam Hogue. Hey, you want to stay for 3 or 4 minutes as we do Barrett headlines?
Sure, absolutely.
Or are you getting kicked out of the booth there at Camelback Ranch, or you got a couple minutes?
No, I can sit here the whole game. The only issue could be potentially the national anthem, but I don't really know when that hits.
Well, just dip out if you need to.
Yeah.
That's Adam.
I'm here.
Adam Hogue at Camelback Ranch. Joe, can we get the bear? There it is. And this is probably the pretty much most blatant, obvious buried headline of the day, guys. I woke up this morning and my right thumb is in severe pain. I'm not exactly sure what happened. I don't know, Adam, you're a few years older than me. Does this mean I'm officially old when I wake up from sleeping and I have severe pain in a certain part of the body? I have no idea what I did to my right thumb, but have you ever experienced something that, Adam Hogue?
Sometimes if you accidentally sleep on a limb weird, like I'm guessing that's what you did.
Yeah, but I've woken up with like, you know, your shoulder's a little off or something, but my thumb, like severe pain. I'm kind of worried about it. Joe, your thoughts on this? You're a young buck. How old are you, Joe?
I'm the big 3-0, baby.
Are you seriously?
3-0.
Oh my God, Joe's older than me. I'm 28. why
There's
did I think Joe
headline.
Was like 25 or something? That's hilarious. So anyways, guys, that's my first buried headline, is that I have a sore thumb. And I battled through the show today, Adam, because I know you needed it. You weren't here. Somebody had to step up to the plate and do Sports Central while you were in Arizona. So,
you know, I like to grade buried headlines sometimes. And yesterday I would say that your Serena Williams... Was it Serena or Venus?
Serena. A+, Serena. This one, big time F.
Because that was like from a story from August that no one had ever heard. Like, that is the quintessential buried headline. This one about your thumb hurting when you woke up,
awful. Yeah. Let's move on to the second most important buried headline of the day, guys. And I wouldn't even say it's buried, but because I saw people on social media talking about it. It's National Cereal Day. Are you aware of that?
Mm-hmm. I am, because the Bears... put some weird Instagram thing out there with their own cereal, and it didn't make any sense.
All right, we have about 2 minutes here. I wrote down three of my favorite cereals, and I thought about it for about 30 seconds. Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Here's a shocker. Most people don't love it, but I do. Life. Third, Honey Nut Cheerios, a solid, reliable cereal that produces every time. Adam, your top three cereals.
We've got the national anthem going here.
Oh, jeez. If you want to dip out, go ahead.
I'm going to respect the anthem.
All right, go ahead.
Honey Nut Cheerios, number one.
Okay. All right. That's Adam Hogue from the desert.
That's
he
awesome.
He had to miss part of our cereal talk because of the national anthem. Joe, your thoughts on cereal?
Reese's Puffs. Those are delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those will probably be number one because basically it's candy for breakfast. Number two, I will go with another shocker, Rice Chex. You know, sometimes.
What the hell?
Yeah, you need a little plain in your life every once in a while. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
And three, I'll just go with, Honey Nut Cheerios. Yeah, why not?
See, when I was putting this, like, when I was thinking of when people give me their favorite cereals, I'm always like, okay, well, are you looking for this cereal that my inner 12-year-old, where I wanted the Reese's Puffs and Cinnamon Toast Crunch and everything that was just sugar?
Right.
Or am I looking for something that's, like, actually a pretty good cereal that's not going to give me, you know, a heart attack, but it's, you know what I mean? Like you kind of got to balance it out. Like, yeah. There should be an adult favorite cereal ranking and a child's cereal ranking.
Great point.
Because if it's a child one, I'm with you. I'm like right there with Reese's Puffs, Cinnamon Toast Crunch, obviously
yeah,
the goats.
Crispies.
Cocoa Krispies are up there.
Mm-hmm.
What are some other ones? Wasn't there for a while? Oh, the cookie. Oh,
cookie crisp.
The Fruity Pebbles.
Fruity Pebbles.
Huge Fruity Pebbles guy.
Yeah, both Pebbles. Cap'n Crunch.
Captain Crunch.
Peanut Butter Crunch.
Peanut Butter Crunch. Big.
Actually, I said Honey Nut Cheerios. I meant Honey Bunches of Oats.
Those are good.
Yeah.
Those are real. That's a real solid. I'd put that in
the
my top three.
Rice Chex is kind of random, I know.
Yeah,
but
right. Yeah.
It's something I would.
Nobody likes Rice Chex. You
yeah,
just eat them because they're healthy.
It's just
and it fills you up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was Talking Cereal on Sports Central. I'm Kevin Powell, who's filling in for Adam Hoge, who's in the desert, who will be back hosting his show from the desert tomorrow. So I think the national anthem, Adam, is the anthem over. How was it? How would you grade that national anthem?
Solid B+.
B+.
Yeah.
Did you hear any of our cereal talk? I was saying that there should be a 12-year-old cereal list and then like an adult, fairly reasonable one.
See, I eat the same cereals I did back then, and I'll rank them still the same.
Right.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Yeah, that's the go.
Honey Nut Cheerios.
Mm-hmm.
Honeycombs.
Interesting. Honeycombs out of nowhere.
Big honeycomb guy.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, 12-year-old Adam Hoge, big honeycomb guy.
Okay. Yeah, if I was a full-blown 12-year-old, I'd go probably Fruity Pebbles, Cinnamon Toast Crunch, and maybe the Reese's Puff ones as well, which I feel like I never got to eat enough of those because my mom would never buy the sugary cereals for us. Like, if she brought home Cinnamon Toast Crunch, it was gone, like, in two mornings. Me and my two brothers and my sister would just, like, destroy a box of Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
But don't pretty much, like, all cereals have, like, isn't hot?
Yeah, but I think
Crunch
some...
is but,
like,
sugar.
But as cinnamon. A mother, isn't it kind of tough to be like, here's a bowl of sugar? At least Cheerios, like, you know. Like, for me, it was always Cheerios. That's what we were always eating, and then it was trying to get the sugar from mom to pour it into your bowl and mix into the Cheerios.
That's what James eats.
Cheerios?
Cheerios.
Cheerios. I like that. All right, Adam Hoge. We'll hear from you. You'll be hosting tomorrow, correct?
Yeah, I believe we're going to have Aaron Rowan on the show.
Cool, yeah. He's got a lot of interesting things to say about Luis Robert, by the way. I would ask him some stuff about that. He's like their outfielder coordinator. So,
yeah, so we'll do the whole show from the booth here tomorrow. Nice. Aaron Rowan, and we'll try to work on some players, too, in the locker room tomorrow morning. So it should be a lot of fun here on Sports Central.
All right, if you need an update on my injured thumb, I can call in at any time as well, Adam. So
no, thank you.
Let me know. Okay, have fun in the desert. That's Adam Hoge. I'm Kevin Powell filling in for Adam, who will be back on. Thanks to Chris Bowden, who joined the show earlier. We talked some Blackhawks. Also had a Cubs recap and talked about Yu Darvish's debut in the spring. I'm Kevin Powell. Thanks to Joe Romano behind the glass. You can follow the podcast on iTunes, listen on Google Play, all that good stuff. Rate it. Tell everyone how much you love it. This is Sports Central. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Have a great day.